Come on. The gentleman will go ahead and start taking our seats so we can stay on track here today. Do we need one more chair then? Do we need Mayor Graham?
Brent David?
Hold that forward. Hold that chair forward. That'd be great. Congratulations. Okay, all set. Okay, gotcha. All right. Very good. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to the Economic Development Committee meeting. And it's still Monday, November the 30th. It's 11:05. And we will call to order the Economic Development Committee meeting. We recognize all of our committee members are here, 100% are accounted for. And welcome Will Haney to the Economic Development Committee. Congratulations, sir, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Would want to point out we have one of our important partners here in the town of Mount Pleasant Water Works General Manager, Clay Duffy's in attendance. Clay, thank you for being here. And welcome to everyone. So our first item is the approval of the November 2nd meeting minutes.
So moved. Second.
All right, we are on the ball here this morning. We got a delayed motion, a quick second. Any discussion, any concerns, allegations, anything? All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Very good. Ayes have it. And we have two another items. We're going to have a presentation for the regional scorecard by Mayor Graham. He's going to give us that update, and then we'll hear from our partners, regional partners from the Regional Business Alliance as well. So let's jump right into those presentations. Eric, yes, any further comments before we jump into the scorecard?
No, sir. Just happy all here.
Thank you. Well, I think we should say we certainly appreciate the Charleston Chamber of Commerce role that you play for our business community here in Mount Pleasant. We appreciate the collaboration that you have with the Mount Pleasant Business Association. We know that there's good energy and synergies between the two. We appreciate the good hard work there that the chamber does. And you know, it's interesting. I would want to note that we've heard that by folks who think there's a choice between our business community and our residents, when nothing's further could be from the truth. Of our 5,200 businesses that we have within the municipality of Mount Pleasant, most of those businesses are owned by residents of the town of Mount Pleasant who are creating jobs and keeping the town of Mount Pleasant employed. We had a finance meeting earlier that y'all weren't here from, and the town remains in a very financially solvent position. So hopefully we'll continue to make those decisions to keep our AAA bond rating, and we have an environment where businesses will thrive and want to continue to invest in our community to keep our community employed and working. So thank you all for what you do, and let's hear about the scorecard. How's it going?
It's going well. Thank you all for the opportunity here.
I'm Steve and I go to Pam.
Gives us energy on Monday morning after Thanksgiving. So thank you all for the opportunity to be here. This is a project that we've done in collaboration with the Metro Chamber for this is our sixth year of doing this report. We did the first one in 2010. We don't do it alone. If you look on the back of the report, there's about a 16-person task force, a technical team that included members of the College of Charleston, the Economics and Research Department, Metro Chamber, Center for Business Research, and some members of our team. And it was co-chaired by Mark Latanzio of SunTrust Bank and Anton Gunn from NUSC. So again, the reason we do this is to provide unbiased data for our community in terms of how we're doing economically and put that in a competitive context, and also to look at the challenges and opportunities we have moving forward in order to be able to create a sustainable economy long term. So Mary, I'll leave anything out on that.
Okay.
So when we were getting ready to produce this report, looking back at data that trended back for 10 years, we very much had the feeling that we're not in Kansas anymore. And so if you think back to the early 90s, and a time when we had a fairly two-dimensional economy with military and tourism and service-related, in looking at the data in this year's report, we said it's a very, very different time that we're living in. We've been able to diversify our economy through some very intentional efforts over 20 years. And we said, well, you know, looking at the last 5 years of data, we said, you know, we really need to think about doing this differently. And we said, how do we do that?
So we started by looking at a report that the Brookings Institution released last year that looked at what they call the advanced industry clusters in our top 100 metros in the country. And when you think about the kinds, if you go back to when the Navy base closed and the alliance was formed and set about an economic development strategy, it's really to take us from that two-dimensional economy to one that is growing and thriving with a lot of diversity, and we have accomplished that. And what has happened is we have gone from being a service-based economy in our region to where we are a STEM-based economy. And STEM is science, technology, engineering, and math. We've got a large percentage of jobs that are being created in our community now in those fields. Why do we care about those fields? Those are the ones that are the fastest growing in the country. They're the ones that pay significantly higher salaries than service-based jobs. So the Brookings study showed us that the average salary and the average pay in the advanced industry cluster is over $73,000 in our region, compared to an average salary of about $42,000. So significantly higher salaries, and that means more dollars are in our economy. The other thing that we found in the advanced industry study was they looked at the top 100 metros in the country. Our three-county metro region is number 76 in terms of population size. We are actually ranked number 18 in terms of advanced industry in the Brookings study. So just to show you that what that sector has done for our economy.
And one quick note, one of the reasons we really like this definition of advanced industries is that it not only encompasses manufacturing, advanced manufacturing like building composite planes, cars, highly technical equipment manufacturing, but also encompasses software, information technology, and medical equipment, device, R&D, that type of thing. So it really encompasses more of our economy than just one dimension.
And logistics and transportation. So Mr. Santos would appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. So we said, all right, if this is where we are now, again, a STEM-driven economy, we need to think about who we compare ourselves to differently. And in the previous reports, we looked at only southeastern metros with population sizes similar to Charleston and with some similar assets to Charleston. We said, well, if we're really competing top 20 for STEM jobs, we need to look at ourselves differently. And if we're competing nationally and internationally for that, we need to look differently. So we held over some of the communities that we looked at before, Greenville and Richmond and Jacksonville being three of those, but we added some that we had not, well, and we also added Austin and Raleigh, which are ones that we looked at before as kind of aspirational communities, but we really didn't think when we were doing this 6 years ago, we were truly competing with them. We also added in Salt Lake City, Seattle, and Nashville as new communities. And so we're no longer saying these are who we're competing against and these are some that we want to watch. We're truly acknowledging that we're competing for not only jobs and investment, but also talent and entrepreneurs for all these communities. And if you don't think we're competing with Seattle for talent and jobs, then you're not reading the headlines and dealing with what's going on there. So we also track. So if we ranked 18th nationally in terms of advanced industry jobs, we want to show how we track with those other communities that we're comparing to. The other note is that one of the reasons we chose these is not only because they have similar assets and similar economies in some ways, but because we wanted to learn from them in terms of communities that have had rapid economic growth, rapid population growth, and what can we learn from that?
So we also were a little nervous when we picked these communities because one thing they all have in common is they're all larger than we are. In fact, we are the smallest population of any of these metros. And then we began to look into deep dive into the data. So let's go there now, Steve. So the first indicator that we're going to look at is employment growth. We benchmarked this report back to 2005. So how has our economy performed since 2005? And since 2005, you can see that Charleston, our metro region, has created over 50,000 new jobs in our three-county metro, only behind Austin and Raleigh and outperforming all those other metros. And one of the most astounding numbers to us is that if you look at where those jobs are in our state, during that same time frame, the Charleston region has captured 39% of the new jobs created in South Carolina since 2005. So there is no doubt that the significant growth is occurring in our state and it's here in our region.
Average annual pay growth is something that we pay attention to pretty closely. I mean, everyone's pretty well aware that our cost of living is at the national average and our pay overall is lower than the national average. So we wanted to track average annual pay growth again back to 2005 data showing trend over time. good news here is we're about 24%, or essentially around the same as Nashville. Still not as great as Seattle and Salt Lake City, but beating the U.S. average and beating the South Carolina average. Just a quick note for you, our regional average wage is $41,900 and change. So if you think, again, back to the STEM numbers that Mary was talking about, that's almost double. So we want to pay attention to that. That's what a lot of our economic development strategy is based on. It's trying to raise wage levels and create more jobs as a ripple effect of that.
And the last outcome that we'll show you that we track is gross regional product, which is the whole economy of the region. And this year we tweaked this indicator to look at that per capita. And why is that? Well, as we dove into the data, per capita, gross regional product per capita is a better indicator of if you're actually moving standard of living in the community. And so when we look at that, again, Charleston performs better than most of the other metros, only behind Salt Lake City and Seattle, who are two metros that are very diverse and very mature in terms of their economic growth that's happening as well.
So before we go, so these are outcomes. This is how we're doing in competition with others. So the other thing that we look at within this report is what we call competitive inputs. So we take about 20 data points in four categories, roll those up into an index, and compare ourselves with these other communities. And so those four areas are human capital, innovation, entrepreneurial environment, and quality of place. And so those are things that are basically foundational elements for how we're going to do long-term in terms of our economy. So the first one is human capital. You don't take away any headline from this entire report. It's that STEM jobs require highly skilled technical and highly educated talent. And that human capital is the main thing that we now need as our kind of primary raw material for these types of jobs. So we will look at that, and the ability to produce, attract, and retain those jobs is very, very critical. So the good news is anytime you see a green on our dashboard, that means we're trending in the right direction. And the 105 is indexed versus the national average. So we're going in the right direction. The good news here is we've increased knowledge workers, or those type of people that need to have specialized skills for their jobs. That's increased almost 36% in the time we've been tracking this data. And essentially, we've had a lot of brain gain. We have a higher educated, in terms of high school graduate and college graduate workforce, than we did 10 years ago. What we know from another report that we did, I guess, year before last, is that, the good news is we have that talent here. The not as good news is that's primarily through in-migration and for people moving here from out of the market. Mm. So that's great.
And that's why we concentrate so heavily on building that talent pipeline for our own students. We don't want to leave our own students behind. So we have, in just the last 3 years, piloted and now fully implemented something called Career Academies in 21 of our public high schools in our region. Career Academies help students focus on and learn about the different careers that are out there, the high demand jobs, and the skills that are needed for those jobs. So we now have 140 business partners partnering with our academies and our 21 high schools. We're reaching 14,000 students now. And our goal is that when a student graduates from high school, they're what we now, the term is now called career ready. They're ready for that next step. Whether the next step is directly into the workforce or to a two-year associate degree or four-year degree, they're ready for that next step because they're more aware of what the options are and they've had the learning environment to help them prepare for that next step.
Second one that we look at is innovative activity. So the ability to create new ideas through research and innovation helps create new products, new services, and new companies. And so we want to pay attention to that. We care about that. This is the perfect example for where this report is not a marketing report about how great we are. You see the red, we are actually trending in the wrong direction in this over time. There is some data lag, so there's a lot of good things going on within our metro and the entire community. We've got a little bit better access to capital than we had in the past, and a little bit better patent activity, but we're definitely trending in the wrong direction, and we're comparing ourselves with some of the most innovative economies in the country.
So one of the things about the innovative economies that we've learned is those that are really growing in the right direction here all have one thing in common, and every one of them on this chart does, with the exception of Jacksonville, have a comprehensive research university. We don't have that in Charleston. And frankly, we're not going to have that in Charleston. I mean, can you imagine the state legislature going to them and saying, we need $200 million to create a new university in Charleston? they won't give us the local government money, right?
That's right.
So, for lack of a better way to put it, we need to be more innovative in how we approach higher education and building those degrees that we need in this community. We've got great colleges and universities here, so we need them to work more collaboratively than they have in the past. They typically have not liked to play in the same sandbox. We need them to do that so that we can grow the degrees we need and help build this innovative economy.
Entrepreneurial environment, this is one of the bright spots within this report. We're trending in the right direction, have significant improvements since we started tracking this. Lots of good things to talk about. Having a strong entrepreneurial environment or a business-friendly environment is extremely important to our attractiveness as well as our stickiness for companies. We've had an increase in proprietors' income share, which means companies, individual companies are making more money, so that's always a good thing. One interesting note in this is that there's been a decline in actual business formation. Maybe you might want to touch on that.
So we dove into that to find out what's going on. And what we found is that that actually occurred in every one of these metros. So the data shows us that that was actually an effect of the recession. And we believe those numbers are going to, during the recession, there just wasn't as much business formation. The other thing that we've done is we've learned, we studied these other communities like Nashville, where we brought back the Harbor Accelerator idea. So those kinds of things are building in our community and are great. Sort of the next steps for us is we really need to work on that early stage seed capital for the beginning startups. That's something that's still not here as robust as it needs to be. So that's one of our challenge areas to keep this moving in the right direction.
And last but not least, we want to look at quality of place. So again, back to that highly skilled talent. They're highly mobile, especially in the software and information technology categories. Those people are in high demand across the entire country. They can pretty much choose to live and work where they want to. And if anybody has a relative or a child under 30, you know that a lot of them choose where they want to live before they figure out what they're going to do for a living. And so this is critically important to us as we try to make sure we can fill those STEM jobs. So the good news is we continue to trend in the right direction. We score very well on this versus some of our competitors that we're looking at. The increase is partially due to an ongoing decrease in violent crime, which is a good thing. It's also due to higher access to health care. There are some troubling spots within this that we want to point out. One is the increase of time spent in congestion traffic. Everybody's experience is kind of a dark spot in terms of our score here. And a couple things to note for you. Richmond, Virginia is essentially off the charts and lapping the field on this dashboard, indexing at 255.
Wow.
According to the data that we look at on traffic congestion, they have almost zero traffic congestion. Conversely, if you want to look at Austin, Texas, which we for years looked at as one of the most high-performing economies in the country, I think my favorite data point is that they're the only metro area in the country that added jobs during the Great Recession. So they continue to attract talent, they continue to do well economically, but they scored an 85 in terms of traffic congestion. That's starting to be an issue for them moving forward.
So one of the other things that's a negative in quality of place is our cost of living and housing affordability. So we wanted to take a deep dive into those numbers and look at what traffic congestion and housing affordability are doing and how are those two linked. So the next chart at the top is what's the Housing Affordability Index by the National Association of Realtors. If you look at those numbers, you'll find Charleston's on the wrong side of this bar. We are the least affordable of these metros compared to Seattle, Washington. The most affordable is Raleigh. So we then took a deep dive into Raleigh. What is Raleigh doing where there's a place that has sustained, continued population growth and economic growth over the past 50 years? What are they doing that they haven't lost that control over traffic and housing affordability? So Raleigh several years ago made a strategy in their community. They wanted to attract talent, the younger talent, the young professionals into their inner core of their community. And so they decided that to do that, they needed to build more density to attract young professionals to help reduce housing costs. And if you look at the numbers, we examined housing density at 100 housing units per square mile in the community. Raleigh today is over 1,200 units per square mile compared to our region at less than 200. So we feel like this is an area where it is appropriate in some places to look at how to build more density to help reduce the housing costs and attract those young professionals to our community. We also looked at, it's not on this chart, it is in your booklet, how traffic congestion, and again, in Raleigh, traffic congestion, the dollar impact to a single person is less than it is here in Charleston, where I don't think anybody in this room would argue that we don't have a traffic congestion problem in our community in Raleigh.
So that's kind of the quick review of the data. Just kind of to emphasize that idea about STEM-related jobs and the talent required to fill those jobs and help drive those companies and those that economic output. Our ability to produce, attract, and retain talent. So it's not just attracting them from the outside, it's can we train up the people that we have within our community that are coming out of our schools to be able to fill those jobs? And can we do the right things in our community to be able to retain that talent and have a lot of options about where they can live and work? So just about everything that's pointed out in this report, whether it's affordable housing near jobs, traffic congestion solutions, or educational training aligned with employee needs, everything relates back to that piece about talent, and because it really is a STEM-based economy now versus a service-based economy.
So we've identified at the end of the report five areas that we think are critical to our continued success as a region in terms of sustaining this economic growth that we are enjoying as a community. Number one is education. We have to continue to work to improve education outcomes in this community. Wando High School is for the poster child. Thinking back to the career academies I was talking about a few minutes ago, they've been doing that forever. We're now trying to duplicate that in the other high schools, but every student in our region should have the same opportunity. It shouldn't be some schools are outperforming others and some of our high schools are the lowest performing in the state. We need every child graduating from high school to have that same opportunity. Secondly is in innovation. We talked about that again. Our Achilles heel is the lack of a comprehensive research university. So we all really need to work with our existing colleges and universities to help them to collaborate and help fill those gaps we have there. Human capital, it goes back to this chart that Steve just showed us. It's about attracting, retaining, and growing our own talent. And to do that, we have to tackle issues like traffic congestion and housing affordability to be able to attract young professionals to this community and make them part of our workforce. And number four is infrastructure. Again, no surprise to anyone in this room. Our state has woefully neglected funding of infrastructure across our state for 27 years. We believe it's far past time for our state legislature to allocate funding to appropriate, to build the infrastructure system we need in this community and across our state. And that's not just building more roads. That's being able to have the funding to do that multimodal system that we know, again, goes back to the attraction and retention of talent. And the last one is what we call global competition. One of the things we learned this year is we sort of blew up this report and really looked at who we are now as a community. We are competing on the global stage. And to do that successfully, to keep that spot, if David travels the globe trying to attract business to this region, the question he gets a lot is, congratulations, you're doing great. How are you going to sustain it? Well, to sustain it, we've all got to embrace what's going on in our community and to work together to help us address these issues that we have, like infrastructure and traffic congestion and some of these issues that we have. It's got to be the public and private sector working together. And we've got to do that collaboratively and as a region.
Okay, one last quick slide. We said that we wanted to learn what we could from these other communities. I'll give Mary let Mary take a breath, and that was a big slide. So we had four things that we teased out from looking at these communities and kind of doing research on them. And I'll start with Nashville. Mary's already touched on it, but a few years ago, the Metro Chamber led a kind of a best practices learning trip to Nashville, and we saw the Nashville Entrepreneurship Center. And that is what Patrick Bryant and John Osborne and those guys basically came back and are replicating. So we got a lot of good things going on there. They have scaled it to the point in Nashville in terms of the mentors, the capital available to startups, and the supporting infrastructure and ecosystem that they have people moving to Nashville to start their jobs, to start their companies and grow jobs. And so that's something that we got good things going on here. The challenge is how quickly can we scale it and support it.
Flipping to Seattle, where we are going next June for our Metro Leadership Visit and would hope that you can join us. Going to learn from a community that's much larger than we are but has very similarities. They are having rapid population growth in their community, challenges with housing affordability, challenges with traffic, all of those things that we are here. Well, one of the innovative things we've just learned about that the mayor of Seattle implemented in June is that instead of in the planning process when you bring a proposed development to the planning department in Seattle, instead of going through your, you know, the normal steps that you normally do for approval, they bring everybody together at the very beginning. So the traffic folks are there, the planning folks are there, the water and sewer folks are there, the fire department's there, everybody's there together looking at what the potential impact of a project really has on the community and trying to coordinate that impact in a little bit better way. Brand new, they just started in June, but we're watching that to see what can we learn from that process that helps us, again, handle the growth that's occurring in our community.
So those are two good positive examples. Austin will use as a negative example. I think we have 43 new people a day, 30 of those are from in-migration. Austin now has about 150 people a day. For years, their neighborhood associations have had the political power and the will to be able to stop infrastructure construction and road construction. And they've done that under the theory of if we stop it and we don't build it, people will stop meeting with it. That has not worked for them, and so now they are essentially choking on their traffic congestion. The other thing that's interesting to me is that, you know, you've got the home of one of the most famous bicyclists in the world. Whether he's a good guy or a bad guy is a different conversation, but you've got a major university and a big biking community. They have literally no bicycle infrastructure there, so they don't even have a multimodal approach to that either.
And the last one is Salt Lake City. 20 or so years ago, Salt Lake City put forth a referendum to fund public transit in their community. It failed miserably at the ballot. And so the community set about trying to educate their population on why public transit was such an important part of the overall transportation infrastructure picture. And they came back less than 10 years ago with putting that ballot back on the ballot. And it passed. And they now have, I mean, they're a model of what public transit system in a community should look like. So we can learn a lot from them, both from what they didn't do in terms of getting that first measure passed and what their system looks like now.
That's it. That's our report. Thank you for the time. We're happy to take any questions.
Well, nice, nicely done with tag teaming, allowing each other to take a breath during that. That was definitely a lot of information condensed in a short period of time. And Thank you for doing that. And I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that David is here, President and CEO. Thank you, David, for being here, as well as Brent is back there as well. So thank you for both for joining and being here as well and fielding any questions that may come up as well. When you talk about the innovation portion, and we talked about what Patrick and John has done here and having gone to several of the pitch events and supporting those initiatives over the years, do you see, does the impact of Steve Case's event coming here increase our opportunity for access to capital for these ideas and entrepreneurs who are looking to be funded at these pitch events?
It does. That was actually engineered. It was a collaborative effort between the Harbor Center, Dick South, and Stan Gray, and Bobby Ocampo, who's RAB. He's basically the investment fund for Steve Case. So two things. One is that exposes people to what's going on here. The other is if you step back and look at it on a national basis from a branding standpoint, it put us in a category of larger communities that have stronger and bigger infrastructure and ecosystems for that. And maybe we, you know, similar to this report, we're kind of at the smaller edge of that, but we're definitely got things going in the right direction. So, and we do have examples of folks moving here that have some capital and invest. It's just a matter of scaling that.
And the other thing is, you were talking about the STEM economy, and we see that you mentioned the center for CAS at Wando. And when we recently toured Mayor Lang and Jenny Moore campuses and understanding the STEM school, that seeing the curriculum from the engineering department being built in the same in classroom setting and environment in the elementary and middle school environment really sends a pretty strong message to the business community that we are continually planting that seed early in that educational years for them. Do you see that growing in the area where it's not just in the high school, but it's getting down into the middle school and the elementary school
Absolutely.
System as well?
Absolutely.
throughout the tri-county region even?
Sort of, what we're working on now is, you know, really solidifying these academies and then beginning to sort of work backwards so that the curriculum is all there to expose these kids to what these careers are here in this community. We want our students to be able to graduate and stay here in this community. So that's all part of it, absolutely.
And lastly, and open it up to the committee, of course, there has been a concerted effort, as many know, to partner with Francis Marion University here in the town of Mount Pleasant specifically. You mentioned playing nicer in the sandbox and working a little more collaboratively with our existing universities. And I mean no disrespect to any previous administration or previous efforts done. Kudos to everything that's been done. How do we learn from that and move forward and bridge that gap moving forward? So specifically from your perspective, looking through your kaleidoscope, what advice do you have for the town of Mount Pleasant administration to consider to continue to work towards raising the bar for that segment?
Go ahead.
I'll give you a quick segue. Okay. I think what we've learned from other communities that are very successful is that the quality of your education, K-12, is critically important. But then beyond that, having that education system, whether it's technical school, four-year degree, graduate degree, postdoc, having that align with your employers and what they need. And so we've been misaligned over the last, Mary, I wouldn't even venture to guess, how many years.
Yeah.
And so we've got great quality institutions that are not completely aligned with what our employers need. So that's true.
And we did a study a couple of years ago, I think I presented it to this group last year, the talent, what we call a talent gap analysis, that looked at what are the jobs we're growing and the skills that are for those jobs and where is the gap. We have them on the higher education front. We are, the Chamber and the Alliance have also recently kicked off the development of the new 5-year economic development strategy. We're partnering on that this time, and part of what we're doing is updating that data. So this screen will have new data for you.
Great.
In terms of really looking at where the gaps education-wise in the community, and that could be great information for you to use as you think towards that.
Great. Thank you. One
quick addition, this is more of an anecdote to add to those more substantial answers. I think some of the philanthropists in our market that are giving to higher education, whether it's Francis Marion, Clemson, USC, College of Charleston, Citadel, USC, they're requiring as part of their gift that the colleges collaborate, work together, align. You know, if it's a logistics thing, let College of Charleston take the lead, and USC, Clemson, you all get in there too. So that's an anecdote that hasn't been in place until the last few years, and I think philanthropists are starting to get that alignment requirement.
David, do you see that specifically, recalling most recently with Sean's contribution to MUSC, Children's Hospital, as well as Anita's?
You know, I can comment on Anita that she and Darla Moore and others required. I know Sean well, and yes. I don't know if he had a requirement with his very substantial, do you all know, I think that $25 million, you know, his was such a personal story,
right,
because of his child being helped there and wanting to give back, and he could. If you were there, it was bringing you to tears hearing his story. That's a great question I can find out. I think as philanthropists lead that way, others probably will see the benefit of the
line. And we have, our college presidents and university presidents here really are working well together. And they see, you know, they don't have the resources, you know, the funding's just not there at the state level. And so they're that's forcing them together in many ways. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing for this community.
Well, what I love most about not only each of you in your individual roles and the impact that you're making for our region, but tonight when you put your head on a pillow, it's in the town of Mount Pleasant for most of you. So you have a vested interest in the town of Mount Pleasant.
Yes.
So in addition to your collaborative effort for the region, you are also acutely aware of the challenges and opportunities we have here in our town. So any final thoughts or opinions in terms of this new administration moving forward to continue to have up front as we continue to move forward with our economic development initiatives? And certainly all of you know that we want to continue to work with Clay and everyone at Mount Pleasant Waterworks and the county and all of our regional partners. We get it that we can't operate in a bubble. it's got to be a regional approach.
Well, you know, I'll just say that, you know, and I do live here, and I hope you're not closing my streets off in your
transportation. All right, we'll strike that comment from the record. That's the next meeting.
She doesn't know, I guess. But I think, you know, one, you're doing the right kind of thing with the harbor, and there's such opportunity, from my perspective, for Mount Pleasant, in terms of entrepreneurial growth and sort of that STEM jobs and the professional services and all those kind of things. I mean, manufacturing kind of feel right from here, but that's okay. There's still lots of business opportunity. On the challenge side is the housing affordability issue. I mean, it's no question that it's an issue. We talk to members here all the time that their employees can't afford to live in Mount Pleasant and they want to. And so we've got to tackle that issue somehow.
And the other comment I would make is, you know, Mary mentioned that we just really kicked off about 6 weeks ago a new strategy that, you know, a lot of the success we've had over the last 20 years is based on having a strategy and trying to follow that as diligently, just making sure that there's good engagement. And your team has already shown that strong engagement of being a part of that strategic planning process, because they are our consulting team, you know, Simmons Allied Consulting out of Austin, Texas, and the Council of Indiana Greenville, working very diligently to try to find a strategy that works for the entire region and not just for maybe the rural areas that have more industrial product to work with, but wanting to make sure that it works and recognizes the changes that they've seen in our economy as well. So that engagement in the process as we go through next May is pretty critically important.
Great. Brent, any thoughts to add to that? You're good?
You know, just a quote from our now Senator Tim Scott when he was Charleston County Council Chairman and trying to understand that all the 27 cities, towns, and three counties and all the different assets and all the different needs and wants and challenges, opportunities, he said, listen, my recommendation, and he gave it, it was a longer conversation, but he said basically, you know, love all 27 cities and all three counties, but treat them all differently based on their assets and their needs and opportunities. And that's what I would say relative to your question about Mount Pleasant. Although we will have a regional strategy that keeps us focused globally and based on our region's assets, we in the marketing sales world want to treat each of the counties and each of the cities and towns uniquely and differently based on what you all want to see too. You know, so it's a matchup. And I think that's where the next 6 months, as Steve just said, having you part of this planning process, strategic planning process, will be very important so we hear your voice and we can align it with our strategy.
Great. Thank you.
And Mark, just one additional item. I have a ninth grader at Wando and I have a seventh grader at Lang, so I see firsthand every day the opportunities that are available for the kids in this market. I just encourage you to make sure that as you make the decisions going forward every day that you keep those kids in mind for 10 years down the road so that the opportunities they have available are broad and match up with the school and training opportunities that they currently have, because we're going to need the jobs for them as well.
Great. Thank you. Elton?
Just a question. Thanks for coming, Mary and Steve. That's great. I saw this at the Economic Outlook Conference, so I'm getting a double shot of it. But we had our lobbyists in here earlier this morning, and to me, the direct approach to the legislature is just not working. I don't know what it is, but they just kind of turn us off. And I'm just wondering, are y'all able to put something like this in front of them, even the local delegation, to show the need and show how we can really be so good if we would just get some money, get some funding. And, I just wondered, do y'all have plans to do that?
We presented it last year to the delegation at their meeting. You know, the challenge is you get a few minutes.
Yeah.
And so we find it's more effective to do it more in a one-on-one or small group. So we are doing that, and we'll continue to do that. The other thing we're doing is, we have been working, we just met last week with the chambers from around the state, so trying to unify the business community across the state so that we're reaching every legislator, especially on this infrastructure issue. And so we will continue to do that. I mean, we felt like last year at the State House we had success and that there wasn't, and there is not, a member of the legislature that doesn't agree that infrastructure funding is a problem. Where the disagreement is how do you fund it? So that's, you know, that continues to be a challenge.
Yes, I spent 10 years in higher education, believe it or not, not attempting to get my degree, but actually working. And in the mid-90s, sat in a meeting where the dean of the college said that distance learning was not real education and it would never happen at that university. And sure enough, that person was not the dean the next year. So I bring that up because I've learned the hard way that educational institutions are the slowest moving glaciers around. And we've got good ones here, and I know they want to do the right thing, but if you see out there, you know, some opportunities, some, you know, we live in the age where the solution is not what we, you know, in our 50s and all think it is in a lot of ways. I mean, look at iTunes, look at Uber, look at all the things that have changed. And so I've been thinking about this thing for a long time, and I used to raise money for colleges and stuff, and there's probably an answer out there that is somewhat different than we all think it is, and I'm open to that. It's a passion of mine, and it goes well with this committee, Mr. Chairman, and it's something we need to find. Of course, Mount Pleasant is the best place to put something like that. Right. And the other thing I was going to mention was my son is a professional yacht captain, and last year he sailed in with an international crew to Charleston, and within 24 hours, every one of the crew wanted to move to Charleston and find a job, every single one of them. So this is what we have. We have that appeal. You mentioned that they choose the place and the lifestyle first, and it's real. One of them has a PhD in management in England, and she wants to live over here. And I thought, wow, wouldn't that be great to tap in to, we have the aesthetic, we have the draw, and if we can just harness that talent, it would be great. Mm-hmm. And that's also what's driving real estate prices up, because we know everybody wants to live.
One good news for you is the College of Charleston is wrestling with that. Showing some really good signs. I'm on an advisory board for the School of Professional Studies out of North Campus.
Yeah.
And the dean is leading that North Campus, Dr. Jonathan Gibson, is leading the charge on maybe not full distance learning, but some kind of hybrid approach, and not only working to make that a reality, but working to affect some cultural change.
Good.
As well. Good. And he's got the support of the president.
Good.
Great. Another quick note, just all relative to colleges, all seven college presidents, so the major ones here and Clemson and USC presidents, are on our Economic Leadership Council and have been for several years. And so that has allowed them to just, when 6 months ago maybe, they all started meeting, seven of them, separately, just to figure out ways, to your point, to work together, be a little more progressive, mm-hmm. et cetera. So I just throw that out there for those of you that wish they could get together. They are, and it's new. And so we'll listen for those things as you're asking and try to feed that back.
Right. Thanks.
That's great.
Yeah, thank you.
John, anything to add?
I want to thank you all as well. Affordable housing, when you say you're looking at it or thinking about it, what does the community like Mount Pleasant, what do we think about? When you've got property values that are high, you know, you can't buy a lot for $300,000 and build a $100,000 house. It's not going to happen. So do you have any thoughts on what we should be thinking about? Or I know there's no silver bullet, but...
Well, and we have started using, you know, sometimes when you say affordable housing, people think you're talking about subsidized low-income housing. And so we've actually started trying to use the phrase attainable housing. Because what you want is housing options for all income levels. You know, it's a challenge. It's a big challenge. I mean, we don't like to think about density, but yet that's part of the solution. You know, where is it appropriate? The challenge we have as a community is we want to keep this place the way it is. And yet we've got 43 people a day coming here, so we can't keep it the way it is. We've got to, that's the biggest challenge we have, is managing the growth that we have as a community going forward. And Michelle Knapp's group, we did a study with them several years ago and looked at around the country what are some innovative things communities have done. And it's, you know, it's purchase, the public sector purchasing land that the private sector then can come in and build on. And there are some options out there. It's not something unique to us. There are communities across the country struggling with it. It's one of the things we're going to talk to Seattle about when we go there, because they have as big a challenge as we do. The average one-bedroom apartment in Seattle is like $4,000 a month. So, you know, you have to put it in perspective, but it's the same issue. So I think that's part of what we do is we look at who has tackled this issue and bring back some models that we can look to.
And Raleigh, they have, in that area, they have a corporation, don't they? That,
yes.
That works on that for their community?
And they, you know, they developed a strategy, their council in there made the commitment that that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to figure out a way to build appropriate density and appropriate places to attract those young professionals. And they got a lot of pushback from the community as they began to do it. And they just made the decision, no, we've got a plan, we're going to stick to that plan. And it's worked. I mean, it is working there. And so that's, you know, that's part of the challenge too, is we've got to figure out as a community where does that make sense and then stick to that plan.
Thank you.
Well, I'll make a quick note.
Yes.
Factor in some of these comments, is that, you know, what people want may, or what maybe the solution may not be what we know is that we're in our 50s. And so I think that's the other thing, is recognizing that younger talent doesn't want a single family, 3,000 square foot home with a yard. And so it's different types of housing opportunities.
You were on a panel that we had recently, and the number, it was astounding, 60% of the households 60. Being formed in our region are single. So, the you know, the traditional way we think about housing is probably not the way we need to be thinking about it anymore.
You know, and I challenged some of that when I left that meeting, just kind of thinking this is not possible, and then I have a freshman at USC and a senior at Wando, and I taught, you know, kind of did my own little family survey, and all three of my kids said, I'm not living in Rivertown. You know, I don't want to deal with this traffic, and I don't want this big house or this big yard. So I think
it's not just young folks too. Yeah. My friend that was with me this weekend for Thanksgiving is just buying a 600 square foot studio in downtown St. Petersburg. And that's where she's going.
Thank you, committee members, and thank you. I think I saw some hands out there in the audience.
Linda Page, 1458 Short Street. Mary, is the one region survey still up?
It is, yes.
I have sent that link to all of y'all last week, not you, John. I would encourage you all to go take the survey. The one region survey is the next strategy, so you can get in and get your input heard now. So I've already sent it to all y'all, so you should have it in your mail from me. If not, I'd be glad to get it sent back.
Let's resend that to everybody and we'll add John to that. That would better get it twice than miss it.
It's about a 5 or 6 minute time commitment, so not too heavy.
Thank you. I saw another hand. Mr. Bremer?
Yeah, Bob Bremer, 2380 Parsons, Miss Lane. Thank you for the presentation. A lot of good stuff in there. Just two quick comments. One being, I also have been in higher education. I spent 10 years on the Board of Trustees of a state university, and I can tell you that they are looking for options. They recognize that their model of doing business is quickly becoming outdated, or at least less flexible, and so they're looking at ways, different ways they can serve. So I think that's a great direction for us to be looking. Second thing is, I think, to David.
Yes.
Your comment.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I think your comment was absolutely where my mind is around economic development, and that is, when you look at these places like Seattle and Nashville and Salt Lake, it's easy to talk about them as a community. But in reality, those are a group of communities. Mm-hmm. It's not just a single city. And I think it is really important for us to recognize that regional approach is the way to go here, but also recognize that Mount Pleasant has a role within the region. And it may not be the same role as Monk's Corner, Somerville, or Charleston. And so I think the discussion going forward for me is, what is Mount Pleasant's role in this? It doesn't have to necessarily be what it has been in the past. It doesn't have to be what our neighbors is, but we need to be able to talk a little bit more about the details of what our assets are, what our desires are, and then build that into the regional approach, as opposed to taking a regional approach and applying it across the board. So I think that's the direction I'd like to see in the conversation headed.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Very good. Any other comments, thoughts from the committee? Hearing none, thank you guys very much, and please don't feel like you need to stay for the rest of the meeting. I know you have a busy day.
Thank you all very
thank
much.
You.
Thank you.
Mayor, do you have extra of these you'll leave for the staff? Okay, great. Thank you. All right, let's jump right into our third item here, staff update on business development activities from our very own Ms. Amy.
Thank you. Welcome. First, I want to start with recent events and then move on into where we see things moving in the future. I would be remiss if I didn't thank Mr. Duffy from Waterworks for spending half a day with me last week educating me on their world, and also sending me home with two binders of homework literally this day. So I, of course, got them all read over Thanksgiving. And then also recently met with David's team at the Regional Development Alliance, at Global Business Development team, and talked specifically about how we do see Mount Pleasant fitting into this overall picture, what unique assets do we have, what would work for our culture and our field, and what we're looking at. And then obviously, recently we went to the Chamber and Harbor's joint venture on that perfect pitch event, which is really amazing to see the College of Charleston students up there competing hand-in-hand with the College of Charleston. I mean, College of Charleston with the Harbor folks. That was pretty amazing. Other recent news, I believe a few of you were able to attend our business outreach meeting series. For those of you who don't know, these were designed to engage local businesses. It's a monthly meeting series spearheaded by this committee. It has three main goals: to learn more about local businesses, understand the challenges and opportunities that local businesses face, and to strengthen community relationships. So our most recent one we held at the Americano, it was their one-year anniversary this month in November, so that was a really great time to touch in with them. One owner said that it didn't get better than Mount Pleasant. I mean, he just said, you know, look, this is Mount Pleasant. It doesn't get better than this. Interestingly enough, a hot topic of conversation included the upcoming Coleman Boulevard improvements. The owners are anxious to see these improvements as they believe that this will increase the walkability of the area and increase the foot traffic to their restaurant. At that meeting, we discussed ways the town supports retail and hospitality business in general, and more specifically, the Americana. One such way is the East Cooper Hospitality Alliance, which is driven by our Cultural Affairs and Tourism Office. The placement on their town's app and the restaurant map, as well as connecting restaurants and venues with organizations looking to host events. The dialogue will continue to be open as we discuss ways to create healthy competition among our businesses on social media and other ways to shine a light on the growing destination restaurants we have within the town. You know, it's interesting, I remember reading back through old plans and documents as I was getting ready for this job, and one of the things there, it was talking about the need for fine dining and the need for these dining experiences. And I get here, I'm like, gosh, I mean, we've got that, you know. We've got all of these wonderful places to go to. So something else moving to the near future I'm very excited about, co-working day Mount Pleasant. So next week, we've invited the region's entrepreneurs, digital nomads, and creatives to get working in Mount Pleasant a try. In celebration of entrepreneurship in Mount Pleasant, the town's partnered with Dig South, and local companies Conceptual and Vega. Vega was actually housed here over, actually, I believe in my cubicle, when the harbor was there, to bring a full day of learning, networking, and, you know, some time to get the work done. We're very excited to be hosting the region's largest co-working event, and that's next Tuesday, December 9th. For those of you who don't know what co-working is, it's pretty much,
thank you for that.
Yeah, I would say it's a movement. It's like a cult phenomenon, really. It's the use of an office or other working environment by people who are self-employed or they work for different employers. Typically, they share equipment or ideas and knowledge, and this whole series is geared towards providing a unique venue or location for these, you know, digital nomads in the area where they normally wouldn't be able to work, you know, and what better place than Alhambra Hall, I mean, the views, and the idea here is to really spark some innovation through this togetherness. It's also a way for us to connect with those members of the business community who may not have a brick and mortar presence and who could choose to work anywhere, and that's something that we talked about recently at several events. How do we connect with all of these people? And so this is a different idea, you know, that we thought would really help with that. So there'll be open co-working from like 9 to 5. So, you know, then at lunchtime, we'll have a local Mount Pleasant entrepreneur as a guest speaker at noon. Then 5 to 7, we've partnered with Dig South to host their monthly Dig mashup, abutting our co-working event. So really, we pretty much got you covered from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. 6 p.m. they'll have the owner from a local software shop, Conceptual, on the hot seat. That's a Mount Pleasant business. We'll also be participating by having the administrator's mobile hours on site there. So we're all going mobile And in keeping with the season and the town's role in supporting its community, in lieu of a cost to attend that you might normally have, we've asked that guests bring non-perishable food items to be donated to the local country food bank in concert with the Mount Pleasant Police Department's annual drive that they already do, so a way to support that as well. I would encourage you all to attend the evening portion of the event as an excellent opportunity to network with local business owners and creatives and these types of people that you talked about. And you will receive an invite from our wonderful clerk of council with more details about the event. For anybody who's interested in the audience, more information, including the RSVP, can be found on our town calendars. And then just a brief look into 2016. There's a whole lot of stuff going on right now immediately. Catherine and I recently sat down and read out a big list of immediate and short-term, mid-term, long-term type stuff. But very soon you will see a new business guide designed to assist small businesses interested in starting a business in the town. So we've gone through the first draft, kind of working on drafts right now. We will provide to you updates to the economic development plan, what we've accomplished so far, what's left to do. We're also working on an education series for businesses in concert with the Mount Pleasant Business Association. Look for that to kick off February 2016. We are in the stages of finalizing the business recruitment brochure. So unlike the new business guide that's there, it's like, you know, more of a manual of step one, two, three, four, five. This brochure would be something that you would give a company who is interested in locating the area. So when somebody calls me, says, I'm interested, what are those key points? What are those cultural distinctions that we have here and those assets here that would make a business interested in that as well? So those are a few things.
Madam Mayor, Eric, our town administrative committee members, I don't know about any of you, but as a 47-year-old, I'm struggling to keep up with that pace. And when she speaks words like digital nomads and mashup, I'm sure that my colleagues to my left and my right know exactly what you're talking about, Amy. And John, I won't put you on the hot seat there, but all I would tell you is hold on, we got one hell of a ride coming for the town of Mount Pleasant. And, Amy, you're doing a great job along with building on actually the great work that you and your department laid down before us. And I just want to publicly say thank you to Mayor and Council for allowing this position to be created. And it is absolutely amazing to see the results that are going to happen. I can't wait when we look back 2 years from now at the significant level of accomplishments in partnering and collaborating with our business community in the town of Mount Pleasant. It's refreshing. And I would be remiss if I didn't call everybody out, because it's mostly town employees and elected officials or appointed officials in this room today. But please pull your phones out, and if you do not have Experience Mount Pleasant app loaded on your phone, shame on you. So go to the App Store and download Experience Mount Pleasant. It will blow you away, and it will help you stay educated, informed on the many things that are going on, and see firsthand the significant works that's happened. Experience Mount Pleasant. Thank you to our app writers who did that, and for all the continual upgrades that happened to that. Any further comments on that from the committee or from Eric on that item? We're good? Anything from the audience? All right. Our last item before we adjourn, number four, approval to task staff to provide information with regard to potential capping of the business license fees for value-added businesses. Now, before anybody screams, yells, and gets nervous, because I was paying attention in the Finance Committee, Mr. Chairman, the line item of the revenue that's generated from those licenses, so I know that. But we'd be remiss if we didn't bring back to this committee and to Council's significant concerns that we've had from our business community, specifically from Lear, one of those most recent companies, Gear Logistics. These are, Eric, will you want to just kind of cap over the overview, the concern that they have, and then take that item off?
I'm going to let Amy do it.
Okay, very good.
She's already been working on this.
Absolutely. All right, very good.
At our most recent meeting with Gear Logistics, they're a pretty unique business. It almost felt like a stock trading floor there. Their concern is they're a very, very high revenue, fast growth company, but do not have large profit margins. In our current business license structure, we look at gross receipts as opposed to profits. So one thing that they had mentioned to town council and mayor at that particular meeting was looking at an alternate way of capturing those business license taxes. And then, you know, has come up in a couple of, I guess, through a few emails and a few conversations, looking at how we may visit our business license structure, our tax structure, so that we are as competitive as possible to businesses. Value add, I believe, in this case, would be our traditional term of economic development. So those companies who do most of their business outside of their regions, and meaning they're bringing in tax revenue to the areas, how I've seen it.
So, Amy, correct me if I'm wrong. One of the things, and Madam Mayor as well, you heard this firsthand. One of the things that, brought this to light is, and here's a business who is they have three locations currently in our town. They're opening a fourth. They live here. They want to, their employees live here, and they want to stay here. And their average wage is in that STEM salary range that we heard earlier from the previous presentation. That is $75,000 annually and above. So these are. These are high-paying jobs, and the company is growing rapidly. But they are a high, as she said, a high-revenue business with a significant low margin because they're basically moving product from one place to the other. And they're going to be forced to be relocated into an outside of Mount Pleasant based on our current business licensing fees that they have to have. And I can't imagine this is the first one, and the first time this has come up. So the request is simply, can we explore options that other municipalities have used and implemented across the country, because this is not unique to Mount Pleasant, and get educated, all of us educated on the issue, and see if there's a change that we'd like to do so that we don't lose that type of business in our market and others that may be similar to that. That was a simple request, as I understood it, to be that we wanted to bring toward this committee. And any questions or comments from the committee on that?
Those are my thoughts. Have you looked at any models? Do we know of any municipalities who are doing a program that's being implemented?
I would say we're really not. It's an excellent exercise, and we are happy to accommodate it, and we are. And we're in the process of getting the information now.
The request just came in.
We're just not quite ready. We'd hate to venture out right now, and we're not ready yet. That's okay. If we can get maybe another.
As you've said, that's what I would like to see. Show me something that's working.
So we're just talking about tasking staff with coming back to us with some models that work.
Some models that other municipalities have used regarding the same business segment with how they've handled those low margin, high revenue business. I mean, the revenue growth was significant. It went from like $5 million to $100 million to $200 million. I mean, the revenue growth is off the charts, and they openly shared, but the margin on that is significantly, it's minuscule.
Is it all that different from, say, grocery stores that are high volume, low margin? And what do we, you know, what's the parallel, and does this open it up to everything, or?
That's exactly the issue, right. Councilman. It's one thing that the business license, as you know, the legislature determines how people will be taxed and businesses taxed and all that. Taxation by the people thing, and they determine exactly how the business license is structured.
Right.
And as you know, the business license is under attack right now in Columbia. So we have to be very careful how we look at it so that we're not treating one group differently and thus expose our business license ordinance to legal challenges that we may lose given that so much money is at stake. So, but understanding what's going on here, we are taking seriously the task of moving forward and analyzing and bringing together the information so that we can give you the risks and the rewards and pros and cons.
Yeah, certainly we don't want to be in the category of picking winners and losers in business, because I can tell you the margin on funeral homes are pretty thin, and I'd love to pay less business license. So would most other business owners that are here in the community. So. As one person who could be perceived as being discriminated against, I do support the work being done so that we can make an informed, intelligent decision if there is a specific industry that we need to look at a little bit differently. I think that's fair and beneficial to all concerned. And at the end of the day, it may be no. But if the committee supports that endeavor, I'd ask you guys to
vote. You don't need a motion to go forward, do you?
No. We're happy to work. Unless you told us not to, but otherwise we're moving forward.
I think we're here in favor of so we can make it. John, you're good with that? Very good.
Okay, good. One thing I would like to point out is that City of Charleston is currently overhauling their business license structure right now. They're going to be coming into alignment with essentially the best practices that have been pushed down to the state. We're anticipating that they'll have all of their stuff finalized before their calendar and budget year runs January 1. So one of the things that I've been asked is to review those others in the region, so the Charleston, the North Charleston type of thing. So I would just,
so timeline on that, can we do a 60 or 90 day timeline on that project? That seems fair and reasonable.
That way we can look at them as well.
We'll call that a priority two item. Very good. Any other comments, concerns? Hearing none, we're adjourned.
Thank you.
Did you write the time before you come?
No.